Hi, Janie.
Hi, Bailey.
Good to see ya.
Good to see you.
You're listening to
Two Sisters Present
America's Sweethearts. I'm Bailey.
And I'm Janie.
This is a podcast that we celebrate women in film through their catalog of work, and we explore it by genre. We are exploring the work of Viola Davis.
I randomly chose the category of
comedy.
Comedy! So I picked the new movie on Amazon, Troop Zero.
Yes, you just have to have a subscription to Amazon Prime, and you can watch it as part of the subscription. Subscription. Huh. Starting off strong.
You can watch it for free. Okay, so I don't even know where to begin with this movie. I just loved it so much.
Yes, I loved it so much as well. You know, I think we both watched it twice, and I enjoyed it just as much, if not more, the second time through.
Same with me. I actually have playing in the background, like I try to do whenever we record, just so I can feel like I'm still immersed in it. The second time, I cried more than I did the first time, for sure. It's just so heartwarming, and I love it so much. The Girl Christmas, when I first started watching it, I thought, oh, this is Bailey as a kid.
You know, it's really funny that you say that, because I, in certain regards, I felt the same way. Although, if I was a misfit as a child, I was not aware of it, because I was not bullied, not until middle school.
No, just her characteristics, not any outside influences. Just her as a little girl reminded me of you. You were always into nature and science, very into aliens.
Uh-huh.
And she just reminded me of you, and she's so precious. So it was nice to see you represented in a little way. Her name is McKenna Grace, and she's just, I think she does such a wonderful job, and I cannot wait to see what she does in the future.
She's already so amazing.
Yeah, she's already so good.
I mean, the young talent in this is very impressive, but she really stands out.
Yes. And one thing that I loved about this movie is that it was actually written and directed by women as well. So when I was doing my research, I found some interviews from Viola Davis saying that it was a very different atmosphere on set. Not that men can't be open and emotional and vulnerable, but there was just some sort of different camaraderie that was on set with it being so female powered and female driven and then directed and written and then performed mostly by women. So it was really, really nice to see that. And I think that comes through in this film, just that camaraderie that everybody has, even when the characters seem at odds with each other.
Yeah, I can't think of the last movie that I've seen that had so many women present and girls present as the main characters. I mean, there's Boss Man Dad, and then there's Joseph.
Mm-hmm. Yep, there's Joseph's dad, and then the NASA guy, and those are pretty much the only other. Oh, and I can't remember his name. The town thief that is their friend.
Yeah.
That steals the motorcycle. I can't remember what his name is, but that's about it for the men. Yeah, it's really nice to see the women really represented in this movie. And Viola said that McKenna Grace is a daughter to her. And she was like, I'm sorry. Sorry, McKenna, but you're my baby.
You're mine now.
You're mine now.
I'm taking you home.
Yes.
I mean, one of the things I think so endearing about this movie and why it's so great to watch, like on rewatches, even if there's short duration in between watches, is that there's so many quirky lines for all of the characters. No character is a throwaway, even if it's small.
Mm-hmm.
There's some dialogue that's really interesting for that character that is not just funny, but shows a little bit, makes the character more interesting.
Yes, absolutely. What were your overall thoughts about the movie, other than that you liked it?
Well, I think it's a really great story about misfits. You know, in this time period, I would have to talk to some people that lived through that time period, but 1977 doesn't seem like it was that long ago, and yet there are these individuals that don't seem to fit the mold, especially the one defined by being in a birdies troupe. What was the the word that they used, the be a woman of substance. Mm-hmm. That was the thing. And how everybody treats them, like with Christmas, she's being bullied by her peers. And then the adults in her life almost say things that are even more devastating because they're repeating the things that the bullies are saying it, but in a more rational adult way. So it's like constantly they're trying to make her small and maybe not realizing it. They've all got the different reasons for doing it, but it's really sad to see that happen and upsetting. But then she keeps pushing through. She doesn't put too much credence in what those people say to her because she is so goal-oriented. She is going to be on that golden record. And I just find that very inspiring.
Overall, the reviews thought it was a good film, but the majority thought that it was just following the old tropes of the misfits who were going after something, and then the journey's the same in every movie, and then, you know, the ending is ultimately the same too. But they all agreed that it completed that goal and it did it well, but it was nothing new. And I get that, but this movie seems so different from like the Mighty Ducks, which is what they kept comparing it to, movies like the Mighty Ducks. And I can see the similarities of the journey, but this movie is so, it's not just these people are outcasts or the underdogs. It's focusing on the vulnerabilities of each person, things that people can't necessarily change about them.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, I'm going to accept you no matter what.
Yes, because the community comes through in the end.
I mean, kind of, but not really. Those girls at the end that are watching them perform still were booing them and calling them names. And
I mean the community they all live
in. Oh, yes. Yes. But what I like about this one is that, like, at the Mighty Ducks, you could feel the stadium's support of them. Mm-hmm. These girls and Joseph had the support of their tiny community, but really no one else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay, because they still stuck together and proved that what they need is each other. They don't need the outside world's approval. And that's something that I think the other movies don't really have.
This is why I don't think the comparison is fair between The Mighty Ducks and Troop Zero. Because The Mighty Ducks, the main storyline is about Emilio Estevez's character and him overcoming some childhood trauma. I mean, I don't even think that that story is told very well, because he still comes off as an asshole in the end to me as an adult. But this story is more about Christmas's journey and the way that everybody is talking to her as a child. The story arc for Viola Davis's character is also important. Through Christmas, she remembers the values that she used to hold as a child. Instead of becoming jaded to the world around you and letting that put you within a box, she was reminded through Christmas how, like, she could achieve whatever she wants to as well. Just because you're an adult and society keeps telling you that you can only be one way, society is often wrong. That's one of the big differences I feel there.
Well, I like that you said that through Christmas's eyes, because that was the goal from the directors, which was Bert and Bertie. It's a duo women's team. And this was actually their first full-length feature. They almost didn't get the job. The producer, who produced, I think, 12 Years a Slave, he did not want new directors on this film. He wanted people who had a little bit more experience, but they came up with their idea for the movie. They showed it to him. He was like, nope, this is your film. So they wanted to present this movie through Christmas's eyes. They wanted the shots to be at her level for you to see the world through a child's eyes. What I really like, what I think is really cool, is they also, for the cinematography, for the filters, they made it a little bit more vibrant, like what we think of as retro feel, I guess,
mm-hmm.
because they wanted it to seem like almost Christmas as an adult looking back, and this is her remembering how people treated her, and it might have been a little bit more cruel than it actually was.
So kind of like Wonder Years?
Kind of. It's like her remembering the past. Everything's a little bit brighter, a little bit more vibrant. And I just found that really fascinating that they chose to go that direction. And it's probably why they ended up getting the job, because it's a really fun movie to watch visually as it is for the story.
I love how Christmas is just constantly optimistic and is always misinterpreting things to be more positive than they are.
One of my favorite moments of that is when she goes to Hell No to see if Hell No will join the group, her own birdies group. And after she talks to Hell No and kind of gets Hell No on her side, Hell No's like, well, Smash gets to come too. Smash gets all the cookies that she wants. And you know, we're not friends. And the whole time she's just beaming with this gigantic smile.
Nodding.
I know. I know we're not friends. I don't care. You're in my group. Yeah. It's the best. And it just shows that beautiful innocence and how excited she is and that positivity that you were saying. Even when she's knocked down, it does not keep her down for long.
Well, I mean, also, like, right before the girls shove her in the locker, they hold her hair and she's like, does this mean I'm in the group?
Oh, that part killed me.
Oh, and the worst was when nasty Miss Massey comes out and lets her out of the locker, calls her precious and tells her, if we find ourselves in a locker, it's because of something we've done. And I was like, excuse me? She said that she doesn't even try to ask who it was that did that to her. It's just like, you need to try to be more normal so that this kind of thing doesn't happen to you. It is like before victim blaming became a term that people used, there it is right there. A different way that people looked at bullying. Speaking of, you know, calling her precious and saying these really nasty things with a really sweet, caring tone. Mm-hmm. I feel like Crystal Massey, she's the epitome of that Southern insult. Bless your heart. There were so many good moments for her where like she says something and it sounds really caustic. And then she's just like, I'm just playing. I'm just playing. But really.
Well, but she also has moments where she does directly belittle them.
Yes, she does.
Oh, my girls are great. And all that's left are trash badges. I'm just playing. You know I'm playing.
Yeah, leftovers for the leftovers. That's just what it playing. Is.
Woo, Miss Massey. And then at one point she's like, I don't like being nasty, Miss Massey. I really don't. I'm like, you have the opportunity to change that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't pick this up on the first watch through. But second watch through, like, I realized, you know, especially at the end where the two of them smoke a cigarette mm-hmm. together, Miss Massey and Miss Raylene, that they had some kind of friendship between the two of them at one point in time. Mm-hmm. And that something happened, like time, distance, society, separated the two of them, and both became resigned to the position that they were assigned from that society, mm-hmm. you know? Towards the end, there's sparks of their original selves coming through from watching the pageant, which I think is really sweet. It's like they rekindle something within themselves. And I think that that's like the message they keep trying to tell Christmas. She's like, nothing's ever going to change. The sooner that you realize that this is the life that you have, and if you don't strive for anything more, the easier it'll be for you. Because that is what all of the rest of them have done. Mm-hmm. They just settled. Mm-hmm. And they feel like that is the adult and what's the opposite of naive? It's just like the more mature way of looking at life. But you don't have to put yourself in a box like that. You don't have to say, okay, I guess.
Wise?
Yeah, I guess it masquerades as being a wise perspective.
Yeah. So before we really start getting into the movie, I wanted to share a couple of things about why Viola Davis chose this script to do. I read an interview where a lot of questions were asked, and one of the questions was about how does she pick a script. She wanted to say that she's very fortunate and she's very privileged because she is one of the few that actually does get to pick a script. Not all the time, but sometimes she does. Even then, she said sometimes it's about the money and sometimes it's about the script, because only 1% of the industry makes $500,000 a year, and that 95% of actors are not working at any given time. So she is one of the elite. But at the same time, she still doesn't get to pick and choose everything. And we actually talked about this last episode where I said something about dramatic films are what she is typically drawn to, or I don't know. I guess we'll find out mm-hmm. further in the future. Well, I found out. It's great. Not, yeah. It's not necessarily that she's drawn to those films. It's just what she gets. And sometimes you just have to do what you're given. Because in this particular article, the interviewer said, "You're funny. We didn't know you were funny." And she was like, "Anybody that knows me, like actually knows me, knows that I am silly. But the world doesn't really know that because I am always in these dramatic parts, which I love."
Oh, but it makes it even funnier.
Right.
Because she still seems so serious and then has these moments of levity. And it is just, it's so amazing. Like with the chicken.
Yes.
Tiptoeing over to the exploded chicken.
And then so she shoves that funny. Huge piece in her mouth. It's so great. She has so many moments in this where I cackled because she comes in with such a stoic or sarcastic delivery that it just makes it even funnier. And hopefully she'll be getting more scripts like this in the future. But anyway, this was one that she actually did get to pick. And she picked it because she saw herself in this role. Or not in this role. She saw herself in the movie. Do you know what character she saw herself as?
No. Which one?
Christmas. Apparently when she was little, she was bullied all the time and she was a bedwetter and had all of these issues because of that and all of the guilt and the shame that came along with it that Christmas portrays in this film. And she saw that and she cried and she was like, "I need to be in this movie." So isn't that beautiful? It's
gonna make me cry right now just thinking about the movie. And oh, it's just such a beautiful movie.
Yeah, she said that as an artist, it's really rare to see yourself so accurately represented in one character. That's not something that you see very often. And that's what you live for as an artist, is to see yourself in a character. And mm-hmm. she actually got to see that, so she wanted to be a part of it. So now we have this beautiful movie. Isn't that great?
Oh my gosh. There's something familiar about it that felt really nourishing.
Absolutely. Part of it, at the very beginning, when she's running around and she picks up that snail shell and she runs onto the dock, it reminded me of our childhood at the cabin.
Oh, yeah.
So immediately, I felt a connection to this movie. And then she reminded me of you. So I was transported back to our childhood. And I think that part of that is the cinematography choice of the filter. Any here? She also picked this script because she got to have her daughter on set with her the whole time. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
Is her daughter in the movie?
No, her daughter is not in the movie. She helped on set, but not actually in the movie. But they got to be together. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Boop, 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 boop. So yeah, she cried when she read the script. And this is a quote from her. "I felt like I was a square peg in a round hole and sort of everything about me was wrong. I did not see that the very same reasons I thought that I was an outsider were the very reasons I was so extraordinary."
Beautiful. Yeah. I feel like that is very true. You don't realize, like, when you're weird and an outcast when you're young, that you're just kind of outside of the norm or what the perceived norm is. You don't realize that that's an asset until much later in life. And often those people that felt like outsiders most of their childhood end up being the most interesting people because they are already primed to think outside of the mold and to do things that are extraordinary.
I've learned to embrace my weirdness. I love when people are weird because it makes them so unique. And everybody has something that makes them special. And it's just letting that show. And that's what this movie is showing. That these weirdos or losers aren't really weirdos or losers. They're beautiful and amazing people who have something to offer.
Yeah, and they just aren't given the opportunity.
Right. Like, Hell No is an athlete. But mm-hmm. it took Christmas trying to figure out which badge each member needed to gain.
Mm-hmm.
to put what everybody has to offer in perspective. It was really interesting to see that that's how Christmas's mind worked.
Mm-hmm.
That she was the one that could say, oh, this quality that this person has, if we just give it a direction, then it can become something amazing.
Yeah, that scene where they go through the obstacle course is so cute.
On that note, let's go ahead and just jump into the movie. I know that we've kind of said bits and pieces of it here and there, but let's go ahead and just Let's start talking about the movie itself. How about that?
Okay.
Aliens. Do you believe in aliens?
Of course.
Of course.
Of course. I don't feel like when I was little, I didn't feel like I talked to outer space in the way that Christmas does. But I do remember from a very young age believing that I had been abducted by aliens.
I remember you telling me that you were abducted by aliens.
I mean, I have a little scar on my arm that I've had since 3 years old, and I have no idea where it came from. And that is my alien implant. I'm certain of it.
Well, I told you, one day I woke up, and you know where they put the IVs in hospitals in the crook of your arm?
Yes.
I woke up with a spot on each arm on my vein. Isn't that weird?
Alien abduction.
Alien abduction. Or maybe something itched in both of my arm crevices.
Yeah, you could try to be rational about it.
Yeah. What is that called? It's not your elbow. Your elbow's on the other side where your weenus is.
Oh. Elbow crook?
Okay. Just curious. Anyway, so yeah, we've both been abducted by aliens. Probably not, but I do believe in aliens. This world is so big. This universe is even bigger.
Mm-hmm.
To think that we're the only ones here.
It's very egocentric.
Yeah. It's hard to believe that there's not something. Even if it's not an intelligent life, it still might be something. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
So Christmas wants to talk to aliens. Her dad said that her mom, when she passed, became a part of the stars and the meteors, mm-hmm. which I think is a lovely thought.
Yes.
Especially for a kid that is already so interested in space. It's just a connection that she can always have with her mother because the yes. stars will always be there. So she starts introducing us to all the characters. Christmas starts introducing us to all the characters.
Yes.
And the very first person that we see is Jim Gaffigan holding this little Pomeranian.
Boss man.
The boss man. And one, this is probably my favorite thing that I've ever seen Jim Gaffigan do. I know that he's a comedian, but...
Oh, he was wonderful in this.
But he was great in this. But he's holding that dog, and Christmas gets a knife and sticks it in peanut butter and starts to lick the knife, and then Jim Gaffigan takes it and gives it to the dog to lick.
The dog doesn't want it. He's like, "You're not hungry?" And he's like, "No, no, not you, the dog." And then licks the knife himself.
So I'm a little bit of a germaphobe when it comes to food. I'm weird about things. Like, I can have a cup sitting on my bedside table for a long time. I know that that's an issue. But when it comes to sharing foods, I don't like sharing a spoon. That's like just really weird to me.
Yeah, that's weird.
So the fact that Christmas licks it, then a dog licks it, and then Jim Gaffigan licks it, I was going out of my mind.
The only thing that would have really completed that circle is if it had been plunged right back into the peanut butter.
Yes. So then she introduces Miss Raylene. She says she's an intergalactic warrior, smartest girl you'll ever meet. I love that. I love that she thinks so highly of Miss Raylene that she's not even from this planet. She is an intergalactic warrior come here to try to set things right.
We learned that her father is a lawyer, but he always loses.
Right.
And his character is very interesting. Because we know that the mother has died,
mm-hmm.
and he's very distracted, and they can't even talk about Mama in front of him. And like, and we see throughout the movie how he is kind of running away from his responsibilities of being a father.
Mm-hmm.
Not that he doesn't love his daughter. He never had to fill that role before, and so he's kind of foists it upon Raylene. Which was very frustrating. It's like, because she's a woman and she works for him, that he can use her as an employee to do whatever he asks right. her to do.
Outside of her job requirements.
I enjoy his story arc. I enjoy all of their story arcs because they all learn something and they all are able to be vulnerable and make a connection, at least at the end.
Yeah, the next character that we meet is Joseph, who they refer to as the girl boy, because he doesn't really know how to play football. He falls over when he runs. He likes fashion. And the very first time that we see him not being forced to do something that he doesn't want to do is when he's singing The Moment I Wake Up.
Yes. And he's already doing choreography with it.
Yes.
It's so cute.
I love him. And then when Christmas goes to ask those girls if she can be part of their birdies troop, when she finds out that NASA is going to be recording a golden record to send into space so that the aliens can hear the voice of children.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas wants to be a part of that, so she goes and asks the birdie troop in town, Troop 5 of Wiggly, to be a part of their troop. And of course, they bully her and they cut her hair.
And they shove her in a locker.
And then, of course, Miss Massey comes and finds her and says that stuff. And then Joseph runs up and sees her and he goes, I love what you did with your hair. It's so abstract. And I was like, yes, that's a true friend right there.
But not just that. Like, when they go into her home and Miss Raylene is like, what happened? And he's like, why'd you let someone cut your hair? And because he's just oblivious.
The dad.
Yeah, the dad. Yeah. And Raylene is like, she didn't let anyone cut her hair. And they're like, tell us what happened. And Joseph, her friend, turns and says, just tell her she looks nice. What's wrong with you people?
Yes. I fell in love with him immediately. He's just a good friend. She has a good friend.
Yeah.
And he needs her as much as she needs him.
Did you ever think about doing Girl Scouts?
I did. There was part of me that always wanted to do it. I think I wanted to be a Boy Scout was what I really wanted to do.
Yeah. I remember our mom asking me when I was old enough if I was interested in being a brownie. I think that's the step before Girl Scouts. And I was like, nope. But for me, I really was opposed and reticent to doing anything that I felt was gender exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
It really made me mad when there were clubs that said boys only,
mm-hmm.
no girls allowed. I didn't want to be hypocritical in that way where like, well, I'll be in Girl Scouts, which is girls only. And in the same way, I also like if there was a boys only club and I was allowed in it, I also didn't really appreciate that because I didn't want to be the only girl in there. I don't know, that just always really bothered me.
I remember in elementary school, the boys would go and play soccer and they really didn't let the girls play, but I would make myself play just to say, no, this isn't right. And in high school, I wanted to play football because I wanted to show that I could.
Yeah.
And there was actually a girl who was on our high school football team. Do you remember her?
No.
Or maybe she was in junior high football. I can't remember. But there was one girl who went out for the team. She got on the team. And I always admired her. I thought that she was the coolest person because she was like, no, I'm not going to abide by these stereotypes. I'm not going to...
Breaking those gender boundaries.
Yes. Yeah. It was really, really cool. Well done to, I don't want to say her name, but well done you if you listen to this. Anyway, we meet Hell No Price and Smash, which Hell No Price turns out to be one of my favorite characters.
Oh, she's so great.
Her arc is one of my favorites.
I want to know more about her story, like her background, because it almost leaves us with the impression that she and Little Smash are homeless.
Well, and Hell No even has that whole speech about, I don't want to see beautiful things because it's things that I can't ever have.
And she also says something about, we're all headed for the boneyard, so what's the point anyway?
Mm-hmm.
This is like some really dark stuff for a child to be thinking.
Yes. On the other side, the introduction to Smash, which is, Smash is like the universe.
Full of gas and mystery.
I cackled at that.
Well, especially since I don't think she has any dialogue. All she does is grunt and fart.
She grunts and farts and smashes things. Obviously, that's a cry for help. I mean, this little girl has no guidance. But
yeah.
But what an introduction.
I think it's a great description. And it's like, I love that Christmas's descriptions of everyone are still so positive and mm-hmm. optimistic, even when both of them were bullying her and Joseph at the very beginning.
Right. We can all learn a little bit from Christmas,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Oh, did you notice how they kept saying funna?
Yes.
We're funna do this. Yeah, well, I looked it up because I had the captions on and I was like, what is funna?
Fixing to and gonna?
Yeah. Hey, why did you pause it?
Potty break.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Don't go too far. We'll be right back. Enjoying Two Sisters Present America's Sweethearts? Feel free to leave us a review.
Tell us what you love.
And if you must, tell us what you don't love.
I don't love mayonnaise.
I mean about the podcast.
Right.
Contact us through Twitter, Instagram, or email.
Find our handles on our website, www.twosisterspresent.com.
You can also join our Patreon with exclusive content and access to picking your own movie or artist for us to cover.
What? You can pick the next America's Sweetheart?
Sure can. Find out all the info at www.patreon.com/twosisterspresent.
Thank you and goodbye.
Later. Hey, Bailey.
Hey, what?
I think it's time for some sponsor appreciation. What do you think?
Sponsor appreciation time! Yay!
This series is sponsored by Lindsay from Lime Life by Alcone.
Lime Life started as a small store in the theater district of New York, selling all natural skincare and makeup products to starlets on the stage and screen. Very our brand.
Lime Life is Leaping Bunny certified, cruelty-free, organic and chemical-free without sacrificing its performance. And a major selling factor for Bailey and I, most of the products are certified gluten-free.
Yes, thank you for not trying to kill us. They're all about supporting women, sending funds to charities like the Women's Empowerment Initiative, helping women all over the world.
I can't say enough good things about this company, but what about the product?
Well, I've been using the One Drop Wonder Oil, and it's for fine lines and to rejuvenate collagen in the skin, along with addressing other skin imperfections. And I have to say, I got my very first sunspot, and I've been using that every day, and it's already faded.
That's incredible! I love this stuff. And for the people with sensitive skin like myself, the charcoal and tea tree oil soap is gentle yet hydrating.
And it smells so good.
Oh, so good. This company and its products really speak for themselves. You just have to give it a try.
Honestly, committing to a skincare regimen every day feels really good, and it's very pampering.
Visit their website at limelifebyalcone.com/LindseyHinkle27. That's LindseyHinkle27.
Or contact Lindsay for personalized care and finding the exact product that's right for you. Find her on Instagram at Linz27. That's LINZ27.
Thanks, Lindsay, for all the samples.
We are all about that Lime lifestyle.
Yeah.
Ready?
Oh, super ready.
3, 2, 1, go.
So we then meet Claire Ann. Is that her name?
Which one? Oh, the little evangelist?
Uh-huh.
Oh my gosh, she's so cute.
She only has one eye. What I find so... Like, I don't understand why they don't just cover her eye, they cover her glasses. I don't know whether that was a thing of the 1970s or if that was just for this particular character, but it just adds to the innocence of her character.
Mm-hmm.
You just want to give her a little hug.
Oh, and her earnestness is so cute. I was telling Ilya about how I think it's really nice that they were able to draw some humor from her earnestness without making fun of her religion.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That was that part where it's like, you're going to survive in the wilderness. She's like, oh, like Jesus Christ.
Yes.
So cute.
And she even has an arc at the end, too. Like, every character has an arc, which is not an easy feat. Mm-mm. For a natural arc to be presented in a film for so many different characters.
Right.
She goes from being someone who gets so nervous just from talking to someone else. Like, when she's trying to sell cookies, she can't even say, "Hi, I would like to sell you some cookies." She says, "Give me money.
Can you please give me money?"
And then she immediately goes and vomits. So she goes from that girl to then standing up to Piper saying, "Get out of here, you
have no talent, you devil snake," or something like that. Yeah.
Which I mean is also unkind, but she's standing up for herself for once. So right.
And it's interesting, whenever it's thrown back at Piper, she can't handle it.
No. But that was also something that I found in an article with, I think it was Allison Janney, who plays Crystal Massey. She said, the thing that really drew me to this script was that, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the article in front of me, was that it shows you that bullies aren't just bullies for no reason. That there's always something that causes that behavior. Like with Hell No Price, she's mean to everybody. And then you see that it's, she's actually a really, really sweet kid. She just doesn't know. It was a defense mechanism.
She doesn't know how to connect because mm-hmm. everyone is ignoring her.
Right. And Crystal Massey feels like she has to uphold this certain standard. So in order to make herself feel like she's achieving that, she has to put everybody else down. Mm-hmm. And everybody has a reason for why they're bullying people, and not to excuse bullying behavior, but that if maybe we can bring some understanding to it, then things can change.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of positive conversations that have been going on for like the last 10 years or so about bullying in schools.
Yeah, a lot of good conversations have come from this. And I think it's movies like this that will really help make that conversation something that is more tangible for people. Because if we can empathize with people and see why they're hurting.
Right. I feel, you know, that there's been a long history of bullying people that are a little bit different. And whether that is because, you know, they have interests and things that are not part of what is expected from what the, you know, like the expectations that society puts on them, and they don't mm-hmm. fit those expectations, or having neural diversity, some kind of disability, or some kind of illness. You know, a lot of those things have been singled out, and kids were picked on because of those things, just because there was something different about them. And a lot of those things have been addressed more recently, and we're moving forward into having understanding and empathy for all people.
Yeah. So we move on to the formation of the group. They can finally stand up for themselves because they have a team. And in order to have a team, you have to have a leader, which is when Boss Man recruits Miss Raylene to be the Birdie Troop leader. And after he convinces her by cutting her time in the office by 2 days a week and giving her extra pay, but he's not making any money, so it doesn't really matter. Raylene finally goes, fine, I don't do anything half-ass. And Christmas goes, that's fine, I don't want to do anything with half an ass.
And then the chicken explodes.
And then because, the chicken explodes.
Because the father put the chicken on top of a beer can without opening it.
But if that's not a symbol of child innocence, I don't know what is. I don't want to do anything with half an ass.
Speaking of food,
yes,
we did not bring this up. Avocados are not mayonnaise.
They're better.
They're so much better than mayonnaise. Is gross. I don't know why. Like, is that an actual Southernism saying avocados are God's answer to mayonnaise? I just don't know why that's a comparison. Because one is made out of beet eggs and the other one is a delicious fruit.
Maybe it's a consistency thing?
Still don't agree with that. I mean, I know they're like, one is creamy and one is mushy, but beyond that.
Avocados can be creamy.
I guess if you put them through a blender.
Yeah, some good guacamole. Ooh, I want some guacamole. I haven't had guacamole in a long time. No, I agree with you. The only thing that I like mayonnaise in is
deviled eggs.
Oh, I do like deviled eggs. So, two things. Deviled eggs and tuna fish.
Okay, I could see that. I prefer my tuna fish sandwich with cream cheese.
Okay. I've never tried that.
Delicious.
Never tried it. Interesting. So, then we have the scene where Viola goes to register the troop, and they get the name Troop Zero.
I didn't even know that was the number.
I don't know whether this was all a Miss Massey thing, because she said the only number that's available is zero. But then when they go to the competition, the ladies are like, I didn't even know that zero was a number. So I think that it was just Crystal Massey doing a dig at these girls by naming them Troop Zero. I'm sure that there was another number available.
Zero is the number of infinity.
Yes, Christmas comes back
with a big old grin.
I love her. I love Christmas.
I know that you are the one that normally notices all the clothes that people wear, but I definitely noticed Viola Davis's wardrobe for this movie.
She looked sick.
I also really love 70s style clothes and the colors, but those high-waisted jeans are so good.
They look so good on her body. Just this style was made for her body. I mean, she looks good in every movie, really. And her arms, like last time when I was like, she has some guns. They're still here, strong as ever. She actually, in some of the articles that I read, talked about how she's been bullied for her body before. I think she's beautiful. Her body is amazing. We need to be nicer to each other, just in general, but as far as our body images go, too.
Right, beauty standards.
Yeah.
We just need to throw all those out the window.
Goodbye. See you never. We talked about... is her name Claire Ann? The little girl with...
I never caught patch. Her name.
Okay, well, we talked about her selling cookies, but I want to talk a little bit about Hell No selling cookies. She goes to the door and says, buy my cookies so I can be a woman of substance. Right, Ray? Bullying so that she could be a woman of substance.
That's so funny. That's the only way she knows how to talk to people.
Yes.
Well, can we talk about the bake fiasco scene?
So what gets them suspended? Yes.
Because that scene is hard to get through. Here's Christmas, who is so determined to get a badge because everybody else has gotten a badge, and she does not feel like she has any special skills. And so this is the only thing that seems easy enough for her to be able to do, which she still, like, is not confident in it because she asks Miss Raylene to just give it to her. And Miss Raylene says, you don't want to be a cheater, do you?
Right.
And she's like, no. So then she leaves the room to prep.
She forgets the vanilla, so she has to go and get the vanilla.
Okay, I don't know why she was gone for as long as she was. That seemed like...
that vanilla was hiding.
The fairies hit it.
The fairies hit that vanilla. Julia Roberts.
Tink.
Tinkerbell.
So then Troop 5 comes in, and they just walk in, and they're like, what are y'all trying to do? Like, y'all aren't a real troop.
Y'all are trash.
Yeah.
You're doing what trash does, being trash.
Yeah. She points at... what is her name? Claire?
Claire Ann. I'm gonna look. Hold on. Because this poor girl's character, we call her Claire Ann like 5 times, but that may not be her name. Anne Claire.
Anne Claire. So you don't have an eye. And then starts talking to Joseph saying, you're not a real girl.
Well, they say, you're not a real girl. You're not even a real boy.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible. And Hell No just kind of jumps to his defense. And then Anne Claire also jumps in and says something. And Lil Smash growls. And Christmas is just like, just let her say what she wants. It doesn't matter. And they're like, it does matter. But she's so preoccupied. It's not just self-interest. I think she also feels the pressure of being the loose end in the group. She's made everybody else want to be on the golden record as well, and she feels she is the one that is going to keep them from doing that by not getting her badge. And because she doesn't step in, Hell No feels like she's got to double her efforts. And she says something to Piper, who just decides that she's not going to take that, so she resorts to the first physical act, which is to crack an egg on her face. It's so ugly. And then it starts a food fight, and Crystal Massey comes in and just immediately assumes that Troop Zero is the one that started the fight because they don't belong there.
They're not acting like ladies. They're acting like trash. And yeah, that
so much trash.
Her ladies were on thin ice, but Troop Zero was suspended from school.
Not even trying to like get to the bottom of how it happened. Just made a whole bunch of assumptions and led her girls away.
Yeah, that's why I love the moment when everything kind of disintegrates. They're all at the restaurant and Viola Davis is telling them that it's over, that it is what it is. Life's not going to get any better. This is right after Miss Massey says, life wouldn't be so hard if you didn't want so much.
Mm-hmm.
That line, oh, that punched me in the gut.
Right.
What a horrible thing to say to children.
It's the opposite of what we heard when we were little, which was, you could do anything if you set your mind to it.
Right. Don't want anything and then you'll be fine.
Yeah. Don't want anything. You'll never be sad about your lot.
It's so tragic. But they're at the restaurant and Raylene is saying it's over. Even if y'all did.
You wouldn't win.
You wouldn't win. Piper comes and taps on the window and gets all the girls riled up again, and all the girls chase after her except for Christmas, who stays in there with Raylene and says, this isn't us. This is some B-rate version of us because no one told us any different. No one is guiding us. Be that person for us.
Mm-hmm. And she says, no one ever did that for me.
But then she changes her mind, and that's when everything...
I love that it's Booty's chicken, by the way.
Yeah.
I wanted some of that chicken so badly.
I miss fried chicken, Bailey.
Oh, gluten.
Oh, gluten.
Someday you'll have gluten-free fried chicken.
You know, again. When I'm on my deathbed, I'm having fried chicken, macaroni and cheese, some garlic bread, cake. Doesn't that sound like a wonderful last meal?
Yeah, just speed things along.
Oh, I mean, it's going to be within, like, the last hour of my death, because the pain will then set in and then it will be agonizing. So it's got to be in a certain time frame.
But just make sure that you're still able to chew and swallow.
But oh, that day, when it comes, it's going to be a good day.
And then you croak.
And then dust.
And that's all she wrote.
And then he can put me in that gray casket from Widows and we'll be good. Okay. The suspension led them to be able to go and do their wilderness badge out in the woods.
So good. That's one of my favorite parts.
Yeah, having David Bowie playing while they're dancing to the fire.
And Miss Raylene, like, watching them from the bushes, because of course she didn't actually abandon them in the wilderness.
One of my favorite moments of, I think, this entire movie was when Christmas is off doing her own thing while everybody else seems to be asleep, and then Helno comes up and is like, why aren't you coming to join us? Then Christmas says, well, I'm not a bedwetter, but if I was, it would be when I get nervous or when I'm in a new place. And then Helno goes, well, I'm a bedwetter too. And Christmas is like, really? And she goes, no. And she asks why, if Christmas was a bedwetter, why would she be a bedwetter? And Christmas says, you know, if I was, then it would be right after my mom died, and I don't know how to stop it.
It's a really beautiful moment, because they're kids, they're super indelicate, especially Helno is super indelicate about Christmas's feelings on that, but because she's asking the questions, and Christmas is answering, she's listening, they come to this place of understanding each other.
And then to keep Christmas awake so that Christmas does not accidentally wet herself, she's like, well, I'm going to keep you up by telling you scary stories all night. And Christmas is like, please don't. Too late. I'm already starting. And then tells her scary stories all night long.
And then they wake up to foxes.
Yes.
That would have made my entire life. I was so jealous when I found out that you got to hold baby turtles.
With my autoimmune disorder, I've had to go through stem cell therapy. One of the locations of that is in Cancun. So I went, and we just happened to be there at the same time as a lot of the sea turtle hatchings. For two of the days that we were there, we went out to the beach and released sea turtles. Birds around there would just scoop them up. So it's a way to help keep the sea turtles from remaining on the endangered list. I don't know whether they're still on the endangered list or not. So anyway, they have these releases every night during this span of time. And so we got to release baby sea turtles, and it was the most amazing thing. And they're so fast.
That is so extremely so magical.
So cute. It's, yes, it's really amazing. It was a beautiful experience. Anyway, yeah, foxes and sea turtles.
Yeah. They go to tell Miss Massey that they've got all of their badges and mm-hmm. that they're going to Jamboree, and they're super excited. And then she says, oh, precious, you know, you have so much to be proud of, but you're not going to Jamboree because you don't have an adequate troop mama.
That I read in section blah, 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 subsection blah, 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 that your troop mother can't have had any prior arrests.
I do want to say she broke into his house and painted all his deer heads pink. And I can't think of a better way of getting revenge. That is so incredible. Not to say that anybody should break and enter and vandalize other people's stuff, but if you're gonna do it, paint it hot pink.
Yeah. But then they ask Boss Man to be the new troop leader mama.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes it on with pride.
He goes to Miss Massey's house and said, "We're going to go jamboree." And she's like, "I'm doing them a bigger favor because I'm not going to let them tell them they can do anything and then have them do whatever they want and then to be ridiculed and laughed at. I'm doing them a favor by telling them no."
Yeah, you think you're supporting them. I'm supporting them more by telling them no.
Ugh, so gross. And he's just like, "Well, I'm going to be the troop mama." And she's like, "Well, do you have $500? I know that you're not, because everybody knows that you always lose." And then all of the community, they all pitch in all of the money that they've been owing him for a long time so that all of them can go. I think that they all felt a lot of hope with just having that representation, because I think this whole community of people, it's made up of a group of people that are overlooked and ignored.
Right. And he even says, "These are our girls, all of them. Troop 5 and Troop 0 are our girls, and all of them should have the opportunity to go." I love it.
Yeah.
But then they go to Jamboree. They pay their $500.
When they go into the bus, though, there's 5 members of that troop. Mm-hmm. And it's like all of Wiggly is handing up all of the lunch bags in all of the town through the windows of the bus. Like, they all forgot their lunch bags. But it's like, I don't know if you noticed that, but it's just like bag after bag is being lifted in through the windows of the bus. How many of them couldn't carry the bags on themselves? Like, it should have been like one bag, because I think it's Smash forgot her lunch. But it's just like bag after bag.
Well, maybe Jamboree is a 10-day trip. They need a bag for each day. They couldn't carry it all on the bus. So they go to Jamboree. And they see all these people perform. Troop 0 is getting ready.
Uh-huh.
And obviously it has something to do with space. Joseph looks like Ziggy Stardust.
Mm-hmm.
They start and the rocket ship is pushed out on stage. Maybe it's because I grew up doing theater that I was like, this is everything.
I know. I was like, why aren't these people appreciating the creativity in this? This is so much more interesting than all of the other things that have been shown so far.
Joseph walks out with his Ziggy Stardust makeup and his hair slicked back, and the pride that you see on his dad's face. That's what first set me off, because everybody makes fun of Joseph for not being boy enough. You know, he just is who he is. When they have the whole fight with the cake, Piper calls him a girl boy or whatever term she uses, and he says, "Call me Joseph. Treat me like a person. Call me Joseph." And to see the pride that his dad had for him, I'm getting choked up thinking about it. It's just really beautiful that it doesn't matter how Joseph identifies, he wears a dress throughout a lot of this movie.
Yeah.
And then his dad just loves him and accepts him no matter what. It's just beautiful.
Well, and then we just never talked about Joseph's scene with hairdressing all the ladies, which I thought was so wonderful. You know, that he's just like, "We're going to work with God gave you, and it's beautiful and it's powerful because it's yours." And then he makes all of these ladies feel so beautiful. And I think it was just one of those great moments of the community lifting the kids and letting them be who they are and show their talents.
And then Raylene says, 9 more years of this and you're going to be making a boatload of money. Anyway, so then the show continues. The rocket rotates. And Christmas is inside as an astronaut. She comes down and puts her arms on either side of Joseph and Hell No. And she walks on the air.
Yes.
And it's just, everything is so creative and fun and theatrical. And I was like, there's no way they can't win.
And there's the NASA guy in the background that's just like, this is amazing.
Yes, he's beaming. He leans over to Jim Gaffigan and goes, "Well, this is unusual." So I was like, oh, they're going to win. All their dreams are going to come true. And then you hear, "You still only got one eye," and "Bedwetter," and "Get off the stage," and "One-eyed freak," and mm-hmm. all of these jeers coming from the audience. And these kids' reactions.
Which, like, it doesn't seem like any of the adults are doing anything to stop it, except for Miss Massey at one point.
Yes, when that girl yelled out, one-eyed freak, she snapped at that girl to get her to stop. But Troop Zero's reactions, how they were just, they were having so much fun and were so into it. And then slowly you can see them, the realization fall like over
shrinking.
Them.
Shrinking, yeah.
Yes, which, I mean, goes to the direction and goes to the acting of these people. It was just so raw. Then everything stops. The woman who's leading the jamboree cuts the music. Christmas walks a few steps and then starts to pee. And of course, everybody's just gasping in disgust and surprise. And you see Raylene jump out of her seat and go and try to start the music back up because she knows that if the music starts, then Christmas will start going again. And then Christmas starts talking. Oh, this is gonna choke me up. She says, "My name is Christmas Flint. Sometimes I pee myself and I don't know why, but I hope that you have friends and that your life is as good as mine is." And it's just so heartbreaking that even in this moment of pure vulnerability, that she's not trying to defend herself. She's trying to show other people that her life is beautiful and that she has some amazing aspects to her life. It's just...
Yeah, and then one at a time, her friends join her and also pee themselves.
Yes. It's Hell No, then Joseph, then Anne Claire, and then Smash, which Smash gets the biggest reaction, which I don't know why. I don't know, but anyway, they all pee, and that solidarity and that friendship transcends, and then they all just start singing again and start dancing. And then at the very end of the song, the rocket spews confetti everywhere and they start playing the confetti and it's just amazing. And then of course it comes to the results. The woman who's running Jamboree is like, "Okay, well, we've seen a lot of people do a lot of things today. We've seen representation of what to do and what not to do."
Oh, that and lady. She's so good at being so awful.
Yes.
She at one point comes on stage. She goes, "Knock, knock. Who's there?" "The Holy Spirit." Which is just not the way that knock, knock jokes work.
You would know. As a little girl, Bailey always wanted to understand humor. So she would walk around with a joke book and read a joke to her mother and say, "Is that funny? Is that funny?" So you would know.
Yeah, it was, "Is that funny? Why is that funny? And if it wasn't funny, I would want to know why it wasn't funny." So as a scholar of humor, I can tell you, all you listeners, that 100%... that is not how a knock-knock joke works. Yeah, so I would know, Chaney. You're right. I would know.
You're right.
So there is a story I wanted to share as well. I substitute teach. Sometimes I get to go where there are presentations that I get to watch the kids perform stuff. Well, anyway, one of the performances was these kindergartners that were going to sing Grand Old Flag. And anyway, there was one little boy that was just ready for the number. He came out on stage as the curtains were closing and just went and stood right in front of the curtains by himself. And then the lady that was the MC came up and she's like, "Are you supposed to be up here?" But then like a woman reached in behind and grabbed him and pulled him through the curtains. And the MC started talking and she says jokes that were just about on par with the lady in this movie. And then you see the little boy sidling along from side stage in front of the curtains. Like, he got away from whoever that woman was that grabbed him. And is like, "I'm going to be on stage." And he starts scooching up behind the lady, the microphone, who doesn't notice him this time. And then, like, as she finishes and she walks off stage and they open the curtains. And before this little boy could do anything about it, the curtains just start to envelop him like a burrito. And, like, the face that he makes... right as he realizes what's happening, there's just like this sudden panic and he reaches up with his little arms trying to save himself, but he can't. And he just gets wrapped up in the curtains. Like, it felt so perfectly comedically timed.
I call those movie moments where it just everything seems to line up perfectly.
I mean, even if they tried to replicate it, it wouldn't have worked.
Right, right. Ultimately, Troop 5 wins. Do you want to talk about the end then?
Yes, let's talk about the end.
Okay, so they've lost. Christmas seems okay with it and goes to have a conversation with her dad. Says, I know I'm not supposed to talk about it, but I miss Mom. And then they have a really genuine, sweet moment.
Yes.
I think that it's one that they both needed and were afraid to have with each other.
Yeah, it was like there's all this unspoken thing and neither of them wanted to break the tension. And it's unfortunate that it had to be the child to do it. But mm-hmm. it's really great that it does happen. And he says, I want you to be able to talk to me about anything you want to talk about.
And then she opens a beer with her mouth. Ouch.
King of beers.
So then the troop is out, ready for the meteor shower to start. Raylene says, you're permanent. Your voice is loud.
Yes. And voices cause vibrations in the air that travel out. And if any aliens are passing over, they're going to have the technology to hear.
She said, they're going to hear you. So Christmas starts saying, I'm here. And then everybody starts saying, I'm here. And they start yelling. And
there's a meteor shower.
All the kids start saying, I hope you have friends. I hope you have Aretha Franklin and Freddie Mercury. And Christmas says, I hope you have Mama. Then you see Mr. Prasad, the NASA guy, come up with his recording and you see him push play and all of their voices are being recorded. They all get to be on that record after all, even though they didn't win.
It's very moving. I think it's a really interesting choice that they didn't have them turn around and realize that he was recording. That would have diminished it to know that they won that way when they'd already won. You know,
while I was watching it the first time, I was like, turn around. No, you're going to be on the record. You need to know this. But then after that scene is over, then you have Christmas on a voiceover saying, we ended up on that record. Which, by the way, it's a lot of fun to do these accents on this.
Yeah.
I get to be my true self, Bailey.
I know, right? After watching that movie twice, it's really hard not to keep the Southern twang out.
Yes, I know. But then, you know, after you have the realization that they did find out later, I love that they didn't find out in that moment. Like you yes. said, it would have diminished it. I just applaud this movie. I know that the reviews said that it was not anything new, but I think that it was a new way to present it.
Well, and there's also a reason why that story still holds so much power. You know, even though I do think that this movie stands apart, I don't think that we should be done exploring that story.
No. Bullying is something, especially with the internet, is something that happens every day, all day long. It is so easy to bully now. When you're not face to face, it's so easy to just say whatever you want without any concern for somebody else.
Right, because they're not a real person.
So there's still so much to talk about and so much work to be done to stop that type of behavior. So I think that this movie is a great way to open up that dialogue. So I would like to end on a quote from Viola Davis. She says, listen, you're going to be bullied your entire life. I'm bullied now. We have the internet. I believed everything a bully said about me. I did. But sometimes people lash out because they can't express things that are going on within themselves. You cannot take whatever the bully says or does as truth. You cannot give it weight, and you cannot validate it. At the end of the day, it's more about them than it is about you. That's what I say, but that's a hard thing to say to a 10-year-old. That's my advice from the front lines of being bullied that I wish someone had said to me time and time again. You are worth it, and you are not what they say about you.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Viola Davis.
She always knows what to say.
Yeah, she's very good at that.
Did you know that she actually has a production company with her husband?
No, that's awesome.
Yeah, I just found that out. I didn't have it as one of my five facts because it's not really relevant to this script. Oh, and this is actually the second movie that she's done with Allison Janney. Do you know what the first one was?
The Help.
Yes.
I loved this movie. I'm really excited for the next one.
I loved this movie. I think it's going to go in my arsenal of favorites.
No doubt. No doubt.
Our next movie.
I've forgotten what I chose. I chose Doubt. Oh. Da, 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 da. Bailey's got it.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You remembered something that you picked. That was Troop Zero.
Thank you for choosing it.
Yes. This has been Two Sisters Present
America's Sweethearts.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.